how often does this happen?
Well, it's really relatively infrequent when you look at illness among populations. However, when it occurs, it can be very devastating because of the rapid nature of the condition. It comes on very quickly and progresses very quickly to, in unfortunately some cases, death in the patient, which is why there's such a push for immunization against this. The challenge with making the diagnosis is it looks like the flu or some other viral illness or some other usual illness, fever illness that we see in young people. And so very challenging to determine what is actually going on with someone when they first present. The unfortunate thing that can happen is you can think you have one thing and then, you know, 6-8 hours later, you're very, very sick. It shows up like flu, and at this time of the year when the majority of our high fever, serious illness students have flu, that's the first thing you think of.
And that's how it presented itself in this particular case?
I can't say, I'm not exactly certain about that. But that's typically how this condition presents, is with a flu-like syndrome.
And I guess when does it become, or I guess what is really the tipping point that a student really needs to be checked out for bacterial meningitis versus the flu?
Most often it's related to neurologic symptoms, confusion, severe headache, worst thing they've ever had in their life type headache, high fever, but the neurologic things of not being able to balance, maybe being confused, difficult to arouse, that is very, very serious. And that person should be evaluated immediately, as soon as possible.
And does that mean an immediate trip to the hospital or on campus, an immediate trip to the Student Health Service Center?
Most typically, if a student came in to our health center demonstrating that type, we would ship them to the hospital, definitely. If they came in with the confusion and neurologic symptoms that were making us very concerned, we wouldn't take a lot of time here to do a lot of evaluation because that's the type of thing that clearly is going to need more than what we can do for them here. Now, sometimes these things occur at other hours and an emergency personnel ambulance may be called to pick up the student. Or a roommate may transport the student or something along those lines. The flu often is associated with the body aches and the fever and chills and sore throat and all those types of things, yet it tends to stay kind of at that high level, sort of stable, and doesn't get worse. But with the meningitis, yes, it may be bad, and then it really just rapidly progresses to something much worse.
Balancing the best interest of the patient who's mm-hmm. who's concerned with trying to limit the exposure to as great of a population as possible is a phone call and reeling off all the particular symptoms that you have. Is that the appropriate first step?
Well, it can be. For our students, we have a 24-hour nurse hotline that they can call with symptoms, and they operate off of very standard protocols. And that student may be instructed to go to an emergency room immediately, or they may be instructed to go to your health center first thing in the morning, that type of thing. The way the diagnosis is confirmed is a spinal tap and spinal fluid then that has bacteria in it. Spinal fluid normally does not have bacteria in it at all. And so if a spinal tap is done and there is evidence of bacteria in that, then you are working off of a presumptive diagnosis of bacterial meningitis. So the person with the neurologic symptoms I was telling you about, the confusion, very difficult to arouse, with the symptoms of, yes, I've had a fever, or yes, I've had a headache, or I've been sick for 2 days, they are likely to have a spinal tap done in the emergency room.
And is the results of that been confirmed yet? I noticed on General Weber's statement they were still diagnosing it.
Correct. A confirmation requires a culture of the spinal fluid, and that takes 72 hours to get a final result. They can make a preliminary based on what is called a Gram stain. It's a slide you make of the fluid, and you look at it under a microscope. And if you see things in there that look like a certain type of bacteria, then you go on a possible presumptive. In some cases, the decision is made to wait until you actually get a confirmation. Other times, the decision is made to notify people when there's a high level of suspicion. And in this particular situation, the Vice President's office, in consultation with me and others, we made the decision that we should go ahead and put out information for students.
Yeah, this is certainly something not to take lightly.
No, it's not. It's very serious.
Is there anything else that listeners on campus, off campus, need to know?
Well, they need to just be vigilant. They need to recognize that not everything is just a cold or the flu, and recognize those symptoms of high fever, severe neck ache, headache, that it's progressively getting worse. And the other thing I just have to stress to people is we have a good immunization available that can either prevent this illness or markedly reduce the seriousness of it if you get exposed. It's an excellent vaccine, and I recommend people get it. It is now a required vaccine from state law in our residence hall students. However, because we can't require them to do everything, they do have the option to opt out based on medical or religious or reasons of conscience. But the majority of our on-campus students are immunized. Additionally, they have now included that as part of the normal required immunizations for high school. So we're in a catch-up phase right now. They started giving it to seventh graders, and now they're doing seventh and eighth. And so within the next few years, we'll have all of our students immunized through the high school, or the majority. And so we will see, hopefully, less of these types of cases. Again, immunization does not prevent all illness, but it markedly reduces the risk. And if you do become ill after being immunized, your chances of survival without any serious problems go up significantly.
And you may not be able to answer this question because of HIPAA, but does this student, was the student immunized?
I am not aware whether the student was immunized or not. That's immunization. I'm sorry, that's information I don't know.
And even if you didn't know, I'm guessing that's part of the student's record.
Correct.
This next question may be off a little bit on a tangent, but we've had two cases of bacterial meningitis reported. Has this just been a more active season for flu and related problems?
I don't think it's been more active. It feels about like it has in past years. It's my recollection, 2008 for flu was bad. We had a lot more flu cases. This year, we're running on our average of what we expect. Meningitis often occurs sporadically. Now, you can see sort of outbreaks where you'll get 2, 3, 5, 7 cases. Usually, in the college population, we don't see that many at a time. That's often more common in a younger population where immunization is not prevalent. A situation like that happened in northeastern Oklahoma within the last 6 to 12 months, where it was young students that were very, very ill, and several succumbed to that and passed away. So it can be that bad. You know, we consider one case bad. Our goal is to not have any more cases or identify any cases and get them taken care of. The medication that we can use is an antibiotic that's very well tolerated, and we talk to them, we figure out how at risk are you. If you're at any risk at all, we give them the antibiotic if that's what they want to do.
And I guess it's an old wives' tale that we've been through 2 weeks of extremely cold weather for this part of the world, and that doesn't matter when it deals with this thing.
You know, it probably doesn't, although there's different opinions and theories that being exposed to extreme cold does stress the body more, which potentially could decrease its immunity. I don't know that there's any good science that supports that. There may be, but it is interesting. But no, going outside in the cold in and of itself isn't going to make you get sick.
Nor is it going to kill a bug.
It isn't going to kill a bug either, you know. So it's one of those things that there is usually a variety of reasons that people end up with an illness. And in our student population, they have some decrease in immunity just because of the life they're living. They're very stressed. They have sporadic sleep patterns because of their study habits and things they have to do. Often, nutritionally, they maybe aren't doing as well as they should because they're busy studying and they don't have time to eat, you know, good home-cooked food. And those those things contribute to our own immunity and our ability to fight off illness. And so that's a piece of this why our population may seem to get sicker than the 25 to 40-year-old population.
Have I missed anything?
I don't think so. Again, for me, it's stress to people that, yes, this happens. They need to be aware and know the symptoms. The information on the CDC website is the best thing for them to look at. It's very factual. It's not emotional. It's factual. And strongly consider immunization. If parents are unsure, have them call their pediatricians. Many of the pediatricians are immunizing children at younger ages as well.